it's that time of year again when your nice hosts take a few weeks off from new episodes. We'll be back at the beginning of March, but until then, we picked a few of our favorites from the past year to keep you entertained each week while we're on hiatus.
While you wait, you can get these and all our episodes ad-free, plus exclusive bonus audio that's pretty nice too. Patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
This week's Nice Replay is episode 293, The Logistics of Moving On with Zach Barth, originally published February 22nd, 2023. Zach talked to us soon after the news of the end of his critically acclaimed studio Zachtronics was announced, which got a lot of attention in the games media. He provided us with some details that hadn't been shared previously, as well as stealth announcing his new studio, Coincidence Games. This episode was also recorded after I got addicted to the Zachtronics Solitaire collection, but before I got truly addicted to it.
Get the high scores?
No. Isn't that how Solitaire works?
No. I haven't played Solitaire in a long time, y'all. It's clear, huh?
All right. You and I are going to have a talk later.
Okay.
But folks listening, keep listening.
All right.
Before we get into the topic, I think we should probably just get a quick introduction to you, Zach, because not everybody knows who you are and what Zachtronics is. So if you can give us just a little bit of a quick background.
Oh, God. I'm a human being. I have made video games in the past. Zachtronics, we made games for about 10 years. I guess we're famous for making programming-y puzzle games. We didn't invent the genre, but we certainly advanced it. Also, before we went kind of full-time indie, I made a game called Infiniminer, which was the... somewhat related to the creation of Minecraft too. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of that was technically a Zachtronics game, but that was not commercial. Mm-hmm. So those are sort of the two things, right? Programming games and then a block game. Mm-hmm.
But I think on top of that, I think one of the reasons I think people like Zachtronics games or as they've been dubbed Zach-likes, right? Is that they sort of
regrettably
they explain themselves, right? So it's for game developers love your games, but I think gamers who like to know how things are made and how things work, like your games. And that includes, like, you've published, you know, documentation on some of this stuff as well. Is that right?
Oh, kind of. I mean, you're talking about the manuals that come with some of the programming games?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a couple of the games are... So a lot of our games are about programming. Some of them are very about programming in that you're typing words into, like text and words and, you know, computer programs into the game. And rather than having a tutorial for that, they kind of are tutorialized it away, but they come with the instruction, like reference manuals, right? Because when you're programming, it's not enough just to introduce commands one at a time and then just hope you remember them all. You kind of need reference materials. Mm-hmm. And it started off as sort of not wanting to make a tutorial for a game that would have been really weird and bad having a tutorial. And so we wrote this reference manual, and then it kind of got a little in-universe and like a little fictionalized. Mm-hmm. And then trying to really double down on that with, that was in TIS 100, which was sort of like an accidental experimental game. Mm-hmm. And then when we doubled down on that with Shenzhen.io, we're like, okay, what if this was not only the reference manual for the programming part of the game, but also a huge source of world-building material, and it all kind of tied together. And we've made like, I don't know, like 10 or 12 games. Only three of them have manuals. So it's not like all of our games have manuals. It's just the programming ones, but it's a big part of it. And certainly, you know, like buying a game that if you bought the deluxe edition comes with a binder where what's mm-hmm. in the binder is actually like truly essential to playing the game. Like that's not a very common thing, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I played Last Call BBS last year and I loved it. I'll just report that back to you. But one of the things I loved about it was that it let you discover it. I mean, because it was literally it presented itself as an operating system. But
yes,
I played it not really the way I play video games. I played it the way I discover new pieces of software by poking around in menus and just trying things and not worrying about my performance or my progression. And that's such a unique experience. And I mean, as a game developer, it's particularly suited to what I spend a lot of my day doing anyway. And so it was kind of like just engaging in that on its own. And I really liked that about it, that in particular. Is that like is that something you aim for, or is that just a consequence of the types of designs that Zachtronics made?
I would say it's probably one of the bad things about the game.
Oh, yeah?
Oh!
From like a commercial standpoint. I mean, people like games that are like games. That's why games are like games, you know?
Yeah.
So... Last Call is I would say it's a collection of eight smaller games, and that was largely in response to we were working at the office. We were working on Mobius Front, which is the previous game. We were like about like half or three quarters of the way through when COVID happened, and then we all went to working from home. And we were able to finish up Mobius Front fine working remotely, but it's kind of hard to start a new game when you don't even know what you're making and working mm-hmm. remotely. And so we ended up just sort of, I guess, rather than trying to work on a single thing as a big team, we sort of was like, what if we made something that was a collection of a bunch of little games, and like some of us could work together on one and some of us could work together on another, and then we could kind of piece it together into this bigger package. We had it was weird because like Last Call start, so there's a game in Last Call called 20th Century Food Court, mm-hmm. right? So originally that the game that was Last Call, like that like slot of a game that because we released like one game a year, right? And so that game, like 20th Century Food Court, was going to be the only game we were making.
Oh.
And so we were working on it, and we had made a lot of progress and kind of getting started on it, but it was hard to see how we were going to build that into a full game. And it was hard to see how we were going to build that into a full game when we were so distributed and things were so disconnected. And so that was when the game that I wanted to kind of make after that, like after we had wrapped up production of games at Zachtronics, was something that would have been a collection of smaller games that were ideas that I had had over the years and never been able to really make. And so at some point it was just like, hey, why don't we just do all of that now, right? Like, why don't we just consider this game as one of those games, make a small version of it, and then make all these other projects that we've been thinking about, and then I can work on it with different parts with different people. And it just kind of all happened. For a while, we weren't sure how to sell it. We were like, well, maybe we'll sell it. And it's like every 3 months, you get like a new floppy disk that comes with like a big game and a small game and like a text file and some stuff on it. And then we're just like, oh no, we can't make stuff on a schedule like that. That's not going to work. And that was when we ended up kind of packaging it together into just the big thing in it.
Yeah.
And then we had to concoct like the operating system and the discoverability sort of like as an afterthought to like, oh God, like how do we like sell this, right? What do we do with this? And so we constructed something, and I like it for sure, but I would definitely not say it's something to aspire to, because it's kind of weird. You know, I don't like as game developers, maybe we're like, oh, interesting choices. I like that. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know about normal people who buy games. They maybe aren't as forgiving.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about games. Right. There's one side of you that really wants to make something artistic and cool, and the other side of you that wants to live and make money.
So, yeah, exactly.
I guess I'm generally when I think about these things conceptually mm-hmm. or I evaluate them. The little sort of art critic in me, I'm wholly unconcerned with the staying alive and making.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like that's not wise, but
well, you're critiquing it, so it's
I
fine.
Suppose so. But I can hear in your response, like you kind of came to the format of this game as a consequence of your circumstances, and you make it almost you sort of downplay it or almost badmouth it, but then you also describe trying to brainstorm. Oh, now this is no longer just a consequence. Let's turn this into an idea. And then abandoning further ambitions for that and just settling with the result of the circumstances. And I think, I mean, to sort of maybe let you off the hook a little bit, like, I think that is still genuinely a good place to start and end with an original concept, even if it was born out of sort of necessity or circumstance.
Oh, yeah. I think that's true with all of our games, too, that we're, you know, we put out like a game a year,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we just had to kind of make games and ship them. Right. And there wasn't a lot of time to think about it too much. I've never been particularly concerned, at least not lately, with trying to make stuff that people are expecting or want to play or buy.
Right.
Or whatever. It's sort of just like, what do we feel like making? What can I imagine making in a year that we can actually execute on and end up with? Mm-hmm. And so it's just sort of whatever we end up with for whatever reason is just like, well, I guess that's the game we're making.
Yeah. Right?
There's, you know, what else are you going to do other than do the thing you're going to do? Right. Like,
right,
you don't really have a choice.
Right.
As much as I would love to be a more successful game developer, I'm stuck in this body with these ideas, and so just have to make the most of it.
Having that sort of rough schedule or expectation, you're going to make a game a year. Does that make it easier to not get too attached to a concept and just let it be what it is? Because you know, next year you're going to be making something else.
I guess. I think it's kind of the other way around. It's that, like, a lack of attachment is what drives a year.
Okay,
like, I could pay attention to something for about a year. Like, that's doable.
That's nice. Yeah, I think there's a lot of developers listening right now just shaking their heads. Like, if only they had that scope discipline. Right?
Yeah. I wouldn't even know what to do with 4 years on one project.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what are you going to, like, make a puzzle game, but then have four times as many puzzles? Like, people don't even play all the puzzles that I make.
Mm.
Right? So, like, there's not really 4 years. Like, I don't know. I think people spend a lot of time just making content. and content is expensive and we're poorly suited to it and it's not going to sell more copies because there's four times the content or something. It's just kind of, I feel like in a lot of ways, I always felt like the bottleneck for me was the ideas. Like my ideas are shit and that's the problem, you know, but like 4 years isn't going to help with that. Right. Like,
yeah. Well, and especially if you're spending more and more time with an idea, because I've been on projects that have lasted multiple years and the more time you spend with it, it's kind of like absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah.
The more time, like day in and day out that you show up and you're working on the same thing, you're like, well, that's crap. And that's crap over there. But they're going to stay in because no one else thinks they are, you know, it's
and we put 8 months into it already. What are we going to do? Not include it? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
So I think we want to talk about the decision to wind down Zachtronics, but I think I want listeners to get a handle on what the shape and form of the company was, because I think I want to get into some of the more logistics about, like, literally the steps. And so to start out, like, what is Zachtronics? Does it have employees? Who owns it? How is that? Just the basics of that sort of thing. Because what an indie studio looks like is sort of opaque to other indie studios, right? Yeah. It could be a single member LLC. It could be a bunch of people with, you know, just a loose affiliation and a, you know, a prayer between them.
Yeah. So Zachtronics initially, and this would have been back in, like, I made Infiniminer in 2009, right? So Zachtronics then was just me. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, I didn't sell anything, right? It was just, like, literally just me making games, putting them online for free. Sometimes I'd collaborate with people a little bit. Like, I made, the game that inspired Infiniminer was a game that I'd worked on with somebody else in college because he was a little bit better of a programmer than me. And so he, you know, like, helped out with some programming stuff, but never really came out. Infiniminer had shit art because I had to make all of it myself. And so, like, another friend from college made, like, some of the weapon sprites and stuff. And so, but it was mostly, like, my friend Keith wrote the shaders for the sky because, like, I didn't even know what a shader was then. And so it was 2009. Maybe not that many people did. But, yeah, so that was just me. And then after, so Infiniminer came out, it was a free game. I just sort of released it. I didn't know what to do with it. It was awkward because it was more popular than anything else I'd ever made. And so people immediately were like, holy shit, like, this is awesome. There's blocks and mining and you can build stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know what to do with this. And so it didn't really go anywhere for me. And then Minecraft came out. And that was, I guess before that, It's hard to even explain it now because I didn't think you could sell video games like a person, right? And it doesn't even make sense nowadays.
Yeah.
Because obviously you can sell video games, right? It's like, oh, you mean you're just like a one person? Like, yeah, that doesn't matter, right? And so I was really, really resistant to the idea of trying to make money with games, right? Even I was making Flash games. And I had made some Flash games and people who were like fans on my site, because I put it all on my site, they're like, oh, you should put it on Kongregate. You can get money for people playing your games. I'm just like, I don't need money for my games. You know, like I was really resistant to doing it.
Sure.
And then finally I did it because they like told me to, and I made $1,000, you know, like in one of their weekly game challenges. Right. And it was a really strange idea to me at the time. And so after seeing Minecraft take off, it was just like, okay, I guess you can sell games now. And that was when Spacechem happened. Mm-hmm. So I gathered together some of my friends. I'm like, let's spend more time and let's make a big game with the intention of selling it. And I thought we would maybe make like $10,000 or something. We ended up making a couple hundred thousand dollars before, you know, like a couple of us decided to stop working at Microsoft and start a game studio. And so for the couple of years after that, and this would have been around like 2012 to 2015, we ran it as a company with employees. It started off just being like me owning it and then having employees. I sort of like Spacechem was profit sharing. And so I sort of bought everybody out of their profit sharing contracts and hired them on as employees and various depends on the people. A lot of people worked on Spacechem, but it was a company that I ran about halfway through that part of Zachtronics. We thought Spacechem was kind of a hit. And then, so we thought Ironclad Tactics, our next game, since it was like a normal game that wasn't like a chemistry themed puzzle game, we thought it was going to be a huge hit and it wasn't. Mm. And so we actually had to like cut the studio in half after that. And everybody who stuck around after that, it was like, okay, we're never going to have employees again. We're all going to co-own the studio. And so we did, but I was still in charge very much so. And we immediately started hiring people again because that was when we were working on InfiniFactory and TIS 100 and we needed people to help with the 3D stuff and we had like an intern. And so we ended up hiring people immediately after that. after InfiniFactory and TIS 100, they both did okay. Like, it was better than Ironclad Tactics because it was hard for us to do worse, but they did okay. But we were kind of not sure what to do for our next game, and we were trying, in retrospect, spent way too much time trying to figure out like how to make a successful game again. Every time I've tried to be successful, it's been disastrous. And so we just kind of didn't really know what to do. And so we shut down the studio and just kind of wrapped it up. So that was the first time we shut down Zachtronics back in 2015. And so I went to work at Valve. I worked on VR stuff for a whole 10 months before I was tired of working at Valve. And so I actually, during that time, managed to find this super random company in New York City called Alliance. And they distributed physical games. So, like, not like board games, but like they would take like, I don't know what games they actually did, but they would take games and put them on DVDs and then sell them to Walmart. And that was their business. And it was huge. They had this huge business. And so they bought Zachtronics, and we all went to work for them, with it being not a company that we ran, but just a studio that we ran, and we got paid salaries, which was cool because one of the things that I think we got kind of hung up on before is that we have all these people, we're trying to keep all these people employed. We need to make successful games to keep them employed. And that was a bit of a burden. And being part of this much bigger company, it really freed us to focus on just making games, right? Because even if we have like games that don't do well, they're this huge company that's like, it was like 50, their business was like 50 times ours. They had like 50 employees. Like, we had, you know, like 5 or 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And so that was from 2016 to, I guess, 2022 was we were, you know, like a fully owned subsidiary of Alliance. One of the weird things that happened though is that like Toys R Us went out of business a couple of years ago, and they were one of their biggest customers. And so over the time that we were with them, their entire physical distribution business just kind of poof, like just vanished into thin air.
Oh,
right. And it definitely like changed the situation a little bit because we were no longer like the smallest part of a big company, but the biggest part of a small company.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, like the combination of that with like, just we were kind of tired of making, you know, we tried making some different games that weren't puzzle games, but we kind of felt like we had to keep making puzzle games to keep the ship running.
Yeah.
And so we're just like, yeah, let's wrap this up. And then this was in, I'd say like 2019 was when we made this decision.
Okay.
And then I was like, you know, I think I want to try being a teacher. And so I was like, we'll wrap up the studio and we'll finish up work on Last Call and then I'll go be a teacher. Well, Last Call took forever because of COVID and working remotely.
Yeah.
And so I went and became a teacher while I was still running Zachtronics.
Oh.
So I taught computer for like a year. I taught high school computer science and during the day. And then like on nights and weekends, just like working on Spacechem while I was at Microsoft, like on nights and weekends, I would like, you know, I'd get home, like you get out of work pretty early as a teacher. So like I'd come home and they'd still be working from like 3 to 6. And like I would, you know, go in and talk to them, or we would, you know, we would talk online or whatever. And so I did that, and then both of those things wrapped up at the same time, which was like last summer. So I finished teaching. I was like, 1 year is more than enough. I'm never teaching again. This is not for me. And then Zachtronics, we finished up Last Call and shipped it, and so that all wrapped up last summer. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the long history of Zachtronics. So it was a sole proprietorship without employees, a sole proprietorship with employees, a sort of like co-owned LLC with employees, and then a fully owned subsidiary of a parent company with employees. So that was Zachtronics.
That's fascinating. You like that you closed once too, right? And then started it up again.
Yeah. Everybody that I've worked with is starting to get tired of me shutting down the studio. And then it's like 6 months later being like, hey guys, I've got an idea for a game studio. Yeah.
It does also seem like when in that history, when things get started up again, it's because it is just sort of made some sense and was easy.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, it didn't sound like a major ambition for you to like grow it as a studio. Alliance came along and gave you an opportunity to run it in a way that was less onerous on you, you know, as an administrator. And so how much did that play into the decision to end it when you decided to end it?
Which time?
Well, I last
the second time.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I to some degree, I kind of think sometimes I just need to take a break from things, right? Yeah. It's kind of weird. Making games is weird, and running a studio and making games is weird, and doing it for years and years and years and years and years and years. Like, it's kind of nice to do something. I've never done anything else, right? Like, I've only, other than Zachtronics, I've only worked, before that I worked at Microsoft for 3 years and like hated most of it. And that's the only like real adult job I've ever had, you know? So it's kind of nice sometimes to take a break. Like, it was nice teaching, even if it wasn't really for me. So it's kind of like that, just wanting to take a break, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, I was just going to say, that's one of the problems of running a studio with employees, is you can't just say, like, I'm going to go fuck off for 6 months, you know? Like, that's, you know, it's harder to do when, like, you can't stop running things.
Yeah. Right? Right.
People are counting on you. And they can't take over for you for more than a few days.
Yeah,
maybe.
Or just, I don't know. It's, they could, maybe. Like, but it's, if you're not set up for it, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. As a quick aside, I cannot imagine. I have teacher friends. I used to be a teacher. And some of my experienced teacher friends have side jobs, but they got them after they already had a lot of teaching experience. So I can't imagine like starting out as a teacher and then also having a job on the side. Yikes.
Yeah. It was nice that at that point as a team, everybody knew exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of ran itself, really. Yeah. You know? Like, I wrote one of the games in Last Call is Chip Wizard. And I banged that out from start to finish over spring break.
Nice.
So I had like 2 weeks off. I'm like, I'm going to make a game. I'm going to just do this now. So
that's fun.
It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So you made this decision in 2019, and presumably you would have executed on it a little faster were it not the pandemic. But
I think a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. When you made that decision, was that something where it occurred to you and immediately you're like, oh, yeah, this is the right thing to do? Or was it something you had to deliberate on for a while? And was it, and how did you make that decision in terms of like in cooperation with your collaborators?
Oh yeah, I went for a walk with Matthew, who's our writer, and I was just like, I think we're done. And he's like, yeah, I think so too. And then we're like, okay.
Huh. So just very natural for everybody.
Yeah.
That's, well, not for everybody. I mean, that's just 2 of 5 of us, right?
Sure,
and we went back to everybody and we're like, we had a walk and we think that we should wrap up the studio. And like, some people were like, yeah, that makes sense. And other people are like, well, I would like to work here for the rest of my life, but like, sure, I understand, you know?
right.
So, that's a bit
different.
We've been working together for so many years.
Yeah.
Huh. Like, I suppose too, the way that it was structured, it wasn't like there would be much use in protesting because like as long as, you know, you and at least another person, you know, were sort of made that decision, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to fight it because what's going to be left then if not, you know, because it seems to be that Zachtronics in every iteration only existed with the parts that it had at the moment.
Yeah.
Right. And
anything
left, wouldn't be that anymore. So there was kind of no going back. I imagine that was probably obvious at the time.
Yeah. I think one of the unfortunate things about Zachtronics is it was often a Zachocracy.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, for better or worse for everybody else who's not named Zach, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's, I would say that's one of the things that I'm like, I don't know. That's it's just a reality of Zachtronics, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that's why we shut it down. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, yeah. I wanted to ask then also, because in between each project, was this an idea that bubbled up every time? You starting a new project thinking this might be the last, and then this was the one where it made the most sense, or is this different than other times when that decision could have occurred, or different from the 2015 shutdown?
I would say it's not something that we thought about every time, but it just kind of we all kind of felt it to some degree gradually increasing over time.
Okay.
And I think even one of our artists was the one who was like, I would work here for a long time because this job is stable and I like it. But even he was just like, yeah, like it's starting to get like, we're kind of just doing the same thing. And we all just kind of psychically felt kind of, you know, just a little like things have just kind of run their course a little bit.
Yeah, you know? That's interesting because like everybody could kind of feel it and sense it. And I can imagine like you're describing it, if you're doing the same thing over and over again, everybody, you know, you'll start to recognize that. And it feels, I imagine, Zachtronics started to feel limiting in a lot of ways just due to the fact that, like, yeah, you were producing the same thing partly because it worked, but also because, like, doesn't sound like there was a lot of drive to necessarily do something differently with that company.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I still really, I like puzzle games, right? I still really like them, but it's exactly. It's like a motivation thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the drive and, like, it just kind of felt like we were doing this stuff because we had to, not because we wanted to.
Right.
And I think that, that's weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's a tough position when you're trying to make something artistic and creative. It's a tough place to be, like, creatively and emotionally, if you don't have that desire to explore something new or some yeah. kind of idea that you want to drive towards and bring into the world. If it just kind of feels mechanical and rote,
right,
then it's hard to get that spark that makes it fun to play. Honestly, I think that's a lot, you know, a lot of times that's where that fun comes from.
Yeah. And it's no one's fault when that happens, right? Yeah. Like, it's just a thing that can happen. It's actually a little scary. Now that I'm thinking about it, because it can happen to anyone, and it's not a bad thing. It just means you got to move on, right? So yep. yeah. Huh.
I've always been a big fan of con stuff before it happens on its own.
Yeah.
Right. Like yeah. do things prematurely, right? Because yeah. then you're in complete control and you can do it on the terms you want, right? And so yeah. there's, I mean, like, we've done lots of things at Zachtronics that we could have waited and let them happen to us. And it's just like, no, we're going to do this ourselves, like, now and take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it always works out. Like, it's good to be in control. Like, I don't know why you would leave things to chance, right? Like,
yeah. I'm saying yes. And I'm definitely someone who has a trouble. Like, I know I should do that, but I do have trouble letting go of things.
Yeah. yeah.
But we all know it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's also, yeah. too, I think there's the privilege of being able to do that, too, right? That you are in a position to be able to move on. And not everybody has that. But then that can be unhealthy, right? Because you're like, I got to keep trying to make this work. I got to keep trying to do this over and over again.
Yeah.
But if you do step back, you kind of realize that maybe you are in a position to change or move on.
Yeah.
But recognizing that, I think, is it's difficult,
right?
If yeah. you're not in a, like, a safe space to be able to make that kind of dangerous decision.
Yeah, or if you for some reason don't have the ability to take a step back psychologically and evaluate whether it actually is dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes it'll feel like leaving or ending something is dangerous and risky. But if you actually stop, kind of change your mindset and spend some time really thinking about it and analyzing it, you realize that actually the risky thing is to continue forward the way that you've been doing it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's actually less risky to make the change. But it's, you know, everyone's really busy in life. And so it's kind of hard to find the headspace to make those calculations, honestly.
Right.
That's why having, like, a sounding board and going for a walk can be yeah. really helpful.
I feel like this decision was a lot easier than you guys are characterizing with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was pretty easy. It's just a job, you know? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think that, like you say, it's just a job. I think a lot of our audience is indie developers yeah. who are working on their first game or are struggling to be successful mm-hmm. or to find a reason to go on. And so I think it is a very foreign feeling to think, well, I guess we can just stop. And so I think that's probably why it sounds strange to you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We have nothing in common with people who are starting in indie development, unfortunately. That's why all my advice is useless.
Right.
Right. There's nothing I could say that, like, I know I got lucky 10 years ago. Like, that's my, you know,
yeah.
claim to fame. Like,
well,
I don't.
I think also it seems sort of unimaginable for people to say, like, well, why shut it down when you can change it instead? But what I'm hearing, what I heard from sort of your last response was that it the weight of what a Zachtronics game was, and I've heard you say this in interviews recently,
yeah.
where you say, like, you want to do something else, right? And the whole team felt this way, and yeah. and I think I had this response, and I think a lot of people did, which is a little confusion, like, well, what's to stop you from just doing yeah. something else? But I think the way you describe it is that Zachtronics was really, it wasn't just the weight of, like, the public's opinion of what a Zachtronics game was, because it sounds like you didn't care at all about that. And I think yeah. is good advice.
Yeah. I think Eliza and Mobius Friend are testament to the fact that we really didn't give a shit about what people yeah. thought about Zachtronics, right? We make games and they're decent, you know, that was our thing. Mm-hmm. They could be anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was kind of a bullshit answer that we gave at the time, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
maybe.
Well, because what I'm hearing is that the pressure to make a quote unquote Zachtronics game came internally from the configuration of how the team yeah. worked. That's what I'm hearing anyway.
Yeah.
And that makes more sense to me.
One of the things that was kind of tricky is that we liked everybody that we worked with.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and we didn't have the bandwidth. We didn't have the ability to hire anybody new. And we didn't have the desire to get rid of anybody, which meant that we were stuck being the same people,
yeah.
which meant that we were kind of stuck making the same kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, because we were just kind of like, We weren't doing well enough to like try to expand in anything new, or like we were just kind of the same people doing the same things. And that was one of the things we were kind of hoping to do with shutting down Zectronics and moving on to other stuff, is getting sort of more opportunities to work together with other people that we'd never worked with before.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Which it turns out was a disaster.
Oh.
No.
I've had experiences like that where it's, you know, really loved working with the people that I was working with.
Yeah.
And stayed, I think, for those people long after I should have just left. And it you know, it's hard. It is hard leaving the people. But it's, going back to what you said earlier, probably best to make the move when you have control over it versus when you don't.
We actually started a new game studio.
I wonder.
Not everybody. It's So the immediately after we shut down Zectronics, I started an anarchist gaming studio.
I love it.
Because some people wanted to work on some projects, and I was like, "Hey, we could like organize all of our resources together and use this as a way to like make stuff and like collaborate together sometimes, but also collaborate with other people." And stuff like that. And so we've been, I see Matthew every day. Like, we have an office. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a big part of it wasn't just about, like, you weren't trying to, like, free yourselves of the shackles of everything about Zectronics. It sounds it was about the sort of the current configuration and perhaps the you know, the oppression of Zach. Right.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So we actually didn't really have any plan in mind when we decided to shut down the studio. And it took so long for it to happen that like we weren't really thinking about it. We're just like, we have to think about making two new games. Like that's the work to focus on. So we never really thought about it. And we were pretty like, I think we were all pretty confident that we were going to go totally separate ways until like people started talking about projects they wanted to do. And it's just like, oh, I could help with that. Oh, like this, you know, somebody else is helping you with it. Oh, okay. And it's like, oh, no, we still know each other. And we're all still like people who collaborate on things.
Yeah.
And so it ended up sort of being like, okay, like what's the kind of structure that would allow us to work together flexibly without it being like a Zachocracy like before. And that was when we created this kind of structure that, you know, allows for nobody to be in charge, but without like the sort of like kind of tragedy of the commons that happens in usual co-op studios where, you know, everybody splits up the profits evenly and people have, like argue about who did what and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat.
So you're talking about it's anarchist in structure, not necessarily in content and output.
No, I mean, anybody can do whatever they want, really. Yeah. Like nobody's in charge, right? Yeah. Like, I guess like if they're not, I don't know what an anarchist game would be. Games are like the least anarchist thing ever. It's code that tells you exactly what you can and can't do, right? But like
here's your
the
challenge.
Organization of the studio is like nobody's in charge. We all can do our own projects and cut deals with each other, and like the money stuff works out based on like stuff that everybody agrees on, but doesn't have to be like nobody's getting a salary necessarily and stuff. So, but it lets us have stuff like we'll have an office together and multiple people can work on a project, and then the studio owns it. So the studio is allowed to like sell it and distribute it on Steam, and we're allowed to do it through the studio. But then we all kind of co-own the studio, so we all have ownership of the shared stuff. But then like the revenue streams get deflected to people based on how much like they worked on the project, and like kind of. And so it's like this whole thing. I don't know. We're still kind of figuring out. I'd say it's quietly one of the coolest things I've ever invented. But it's just for us and nobody else gets to see it. But it's super cool, right? I've never been excited about like a corporate like structure before. But when I'm doing all the taxes and stuff, so it's like back into doing that after years of saying that I was too busy to do our own taxes. But yeah, it's really exciting to be, I don't know, just design like a new structure. It feels very like something employment is so 20th century, you know, like trying to design a version of it that's like not, I feel like a lot of the stuff that's eroding employment is all bad for everybody. And so it's nice to come up with something that feels empowering.
Yeah.
That, like, erodes employment. So yeah, it's, I don't know. It's kind of cool. We've only been doing it for 6 months. So that's
just saying like the money stuff will figure itself out. Like that sounds very familiar to folks who have started anything. And there's some naivete to that, like some self-awareness though, right? Like, knowing that like, yeah, we're not planning this out fully, but that negative is better than the alternative, which is to come up with a suffocating structure now that we don't know will work for us.
Oh no, we have it all planned out. It's quite rigorous. I have a document. The whole thing is that we can cut our own little agreements with each other internally, which lessens the burden of having to do it as like external entities. Like we have our own, like it's, I came up with the idea after reading this book about, it's called Legal Systems Very Different from Ours. Uh-huh. And it's about legal systems that are very different than ours. And a big theme in the book was situated legal systems, which is legal systems within legal systems. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of communities have their own legal systems within legal systems. And so they can make their own decisions with their own rules inside of their own entity, but they're situated within a larger legal system, like we are all situated within, like, you know, being running a business in the United States, like there's a legal system now that's already in place.
Yeah.
And so that was what kind of led me to think, like, how could we create our own little, like, situated, you know, like self-adjudicated legal system within the greater one that allows us to be, you know, have like lower transaction costs on working together and stuff like that. And so it's
That's
pretty fucking cool.
Okay, so there was a rigorous planning process.
Oh no, yeah, there's like a white paper that I, you know, distributed amongst everybody, like to explain how it works and stuff. And there's like an accounting method that, you know, makes all this stuff work out. It's pretty rigorous. So I didn't want to fall into the trap of people naively running a co-op. Like that's not Zachtronics-y, you know, just like letting things happen or being incorrect, you know. So. Yeah, it's very deliberate.
He made a manual for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Basically.
So how long did that, I mean, now I just want to talk about this now.
Fuck Zachtronics. Zachtronics is dead. Yeah. Long live coincidence.
How long did that, I mean, like you say, you maybe were a little bit surprised to have come up with this idea, but then how long did it take to put that white paper together?
Oh, I don't just wrote it up in an evening.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I would say it took us probably like 6 months of talking about it. Right. I had to talk to like some people I knew who did like lawyery stuff and accountant-y stuff to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to figure out how to like do our taxes properly.
Right. Right.
But, I don't know. It took us like probably like 6 months of just like thinking like, okay, like getting into the mindset of Zachtronics being like good and dead. And then, just thinking about like, well, what do we want the future to look like?
Yeah.
And just kind of letting that simmer. And Zachtronics is also not dead, I should say. We very much still sell and support our games. Yeah. If you have a problem with your games, it will go to me. I still like work at Zachtronics doing that. We're just not making anything new.
Right.
But people like think they're like, oh, now that your games are no longer being sold, are you going to like give them all up to charity or like open source them all? It's like, no, we very much still sell them and make money off of them.
Yeah.
Well, it's an important revenue stream.
I was going to ask about that because I think that for folks who are in game development, I think that seems fairly self-evident. Maybe not to gamers. But,
yeah.
So really all it is it's left is an entity and it's still aligned with Alliance. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And they still own it. Yeah, I still work for him. Yeah.
And so the new structure that you're part of, that you're putting together, does that have a relationship with Alliance, or is that separate?
They're pretty separate.
Yeah.
Technically, I do all my contracting through the co-op.
Yeah.
So So it's tech. They're unrelated. That's.
Doing it again.
We're talking about Patreon.
Patreon.
Again, you guys?
Yes.
This is like the third time in a row.
It is.
Okay, we said we're beating the drum. We're going to beat the listeners? No.
No.
Cut that.
Okay, yeah.
We got to rehearse these.
Listen, we have good content on Patreon. We've added new content, ad-free episodes. If you're sick of ads, you can listen to them on Patreon without ads. Also, one thing I wanted to bring up that was important. Max got us this interview. It's a great interview.
And they've only heard half of it.
Yeah. And we wouldn't have Max without Patreon. So you supporting us through Patreon helps support the show in more ways than just, you know, we get paid to do a kind of expensive run.
Yeah, it's a direct line to getting the cool guests that we've been getting lately.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And really, we wouldn't be able to do that without the support, direct support from listeners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you are one of those people who's already a patron, thank you very much.
Yeah. This isn't for you.
Right.
You just keep on keeping on.
Well, like,
the rest of you.
Get on it.
I was going to say, like, this one's for you, you know, like.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's for them in a certain way. Yeah, we do have to rehearse these.
Yeah, okay.
Patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Go to that.
That was terrible, and we're going to stick with it.
No, it's Patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I do want to just talk all about this new this new thing.
I mean, you can.
We can. I know, but there's a couple of things I do want to get into.
Okay.
Which is I do want to talk a little bit more about Last Call because I think you gave us a lot already about it, which is like where it came from and how, you know, how it was made and the sort of time and place of it. But I want to talk a little bit about the content itself. And how much that was sort of inspired or even about the fact that you'd made that decision already to end Zachtronics.
Yeah, like
the
definitely.
The world, right? Building.
It's called Last Call.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, yeah, it definitely. I mean, I think that was one of the things we figured out is that these were game ideas we had that never became real games or like stuff that I had been toying with. And so like, especially, you know, like the 20th Century Food Court, all the big games were sort of big things that I'd been thinking about. You know, Chip Wizard is very much a sequel to this flash game Constructor I made years ago that people have been emailing me for like 10 years asking for a sequel to or a remake or something. And so it's literally like Last Call, like, this is your last chance to get a Zachtronics game, right? I guess people didn't get to ask for what they wanted, but it is kind of based on stuff that people like, you know, like the Constructor one really was something that people had been asking for. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was kind of like that. And so we really leaned into it, like with the name and the idea. And then the story of the game is very much about somebody looking back at their, like looking back at their life through the eyes of, like all the people who made software and games that they knew over the like the years. Like that's the story, is this person who sets up this old computer for you to play around with. And then as you play the different games, like it turns out all those games are on there because he knew all the people who made those games and all of them stopped making games. And so it's all about the careers of those people.
Yeah.
Like one of them was just like an indie game made by a random guy who only ever worked by himself. And one of them was about a guy who ran a small game studio called Zach Maddox, who shut down the studio to become a teacher, you know? Like, that's one of the games is about like a coked up movie executive who wants to get into games and has like big ideas for games. And it's all that they're all about, like people who made games and the game, they stopped making games and the games went away. And
yeah,
like, it was all about, you know, that. And so there are a bunch of different ways of looking into like kind of what happened with us and less cocaine, I guess, but yeah.
Well, I think reading about the personalities in that world, I think the principal innovation of that game was not to set it in the past, but to just make it about the past. And I think that, and so I'm working on the sequel to Hypnospace Outlaw, so there's a couple of things in Last Call that I'm looking at and like, oh, we're doing something similar. Oh, we're doing something totally different. And so it meant a lot to me playing it, working on something similar. And I think that idea of like that context of, oh, this is an old machine, I'm booting it up for the first time in 20 years, and putting yourself in that space is very different from a kind of nostalgia that might seem more obvious or easier, which is just to like, haha, look at the past.
Yeah, that's all Matthew. I would have done the bad thing if left to my own devices on that, surely. Like that's just a testament to him being like a good writer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and just the fact that like some of the stories are incomplete, like you don't know what happened to some people.
Oh yeah,
I don't know. Just I mean, this is just the portion of the show where I just lavish praise on it because I think it's a great combination of mechanic and experience and storytelling, which for I think a lot of game developers think you need to have a complicated game with a lot of systems to be able to do that. And I think I think you can have a lot of nuance and depth and complexity in those relationships without needing a ton of those systems. And I think it was just a wonderful balance. And hearing that it came out of sort of a, well, this is what we got, this is what we'll make. Like that sort of organic process, that makes it sort of all the more interesting in that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a grand plan to put it together this way. It's that you just, it was what it was. And that's why it's the best version of what it is, I think.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to respond to that. I just
Good job. I don't know. I still very much feel like it was like it wasn't super successful, right? It's not it's very much a game. It's a Zachtronics game for Zachtronics fans, which was kind of what we intended, but like it's always it's definitely after making commercial video games, it's hard to not like think about it like a person who makes commercial video games, right? And it's always just like, well, this did less well than Opus Magnum because everything I'll ever make again will do less well than Opus Magnum. I didn't even like that game all that much.
Yeah.
So it's weird. But yeah,
Well, to that point, under this new regime.
Not regime.
Okay.
I'm down with regime. I can call it that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, when the next thing that comes out as a result, whether it's something you lead or something from the rest of the team leads, will you find yourself, can you imagine finding yourself less naturally comparing it to previous successes because it is kind of starting over? Or will you find yourself doing
that? I think I'm pretty ruined.
Yeah.
As a person, I just feel, for sure. 100%. Cursed. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was bad. I mean, I think that, like, if I had never had the thrill of making video games, maybe I would have stuck with teaching for longer. Mm-hmm. Right. But, like, it's just hard to compete with one of my students. Like, he's like, why'd you become a teacher, Mr. Barth? I'm just like, I just wanted to see what it was like. And then he's just like, yo, Mr. Barth's a main character. He's a main character. Is that something like that. Like, yeah. So I was just like, yeah, this kid has me pegged. Yeah. Like, you get to be such like a narcissist when you're making video games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And being praised for just fucking whatever you come up with. Like, oh, we need to make a game. We'll just make something. And then critics are just like, oh, this game is amazing. The thing you do with the storytelling, whatever you just said.
Yeah, sorry.
But like, right? No, but that's the truth, right? Is like you get all this attention just for doing like anything.
Yeah.
Right? I guess not anything, but like doing the thing that just comes naturally. And it's like, it's hard to like, so like, well, I'm just gonna be a teacher. I'm just gonna hang out with these kids who don't appreciate anything I do and don't even like programming all that much. And it's like, no, I'm gonna go back to where all the praise gets heaped on me by adoring fans and critics. Yeah. I am super ruined by being a commercial game developer.
Mm-hmm. Being human, apparently.
Yeah. Well, okay. For our listeners, I think one of the things that you can take away from this is, because I think a lot of times a successful game developer like yourself, whatever measure of success you want to put on it, will say things like that. And I think it's, for someone who hasn't had success, it can sound like false humility. But I think the thing that you should take away from that instead is that that kind of praise that someone like you will get is within everyone's reach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think hearing you say, like, it's just a thing I made, guy. Like, it's not, you know, I think that shouldn't depress the struggling game developer out there. That should inspire them.
Right.
Because it just means that, you know, I mean, it's the commercial success kind of that what brings you the praise in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, every idea you make is pretty good. Like, that's kind of what I've always sort of felt. And there's discipline and skill and talent that you have to bring to it. And, you know, not all things are equal. But I think it can be, to hearing someone like you just say, like, well, we just did what seemed natural. It wasn't this grand plan or opus, I think should make people feel a little bit like, more like they can relate to you.
Yeah, it's a testament to, like, how unique everybody's games are. Like, people felt that your game, even though you were just doing what you were doing, right? People felt that it had an impact in their lives. They enjoyed it, and they were heaping praise on you because of it. And it's just a thing you were doing, right? Yeah. Like, and anyone can do that. Like, when I'm making a game, somebody can go, oh, wow, that's Steven made that game, and I loved it so much. And I'd be like, I just did the thing, and I balanced some numbers. I like balancing numbers, thanks. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
you're doing the thing that you love. Yeah. And mm-hmm. because you're doing the thing that you love to do and that you, you know, that you're good at and comes naturally, even if you weren't good at it yet, like if you love doing it, you're going to continue doing it and right. you're going to get better at it and then you will be good at it.
Yeah.
That's some of it.
So, Zach, this extended run of us letting you off the hook, does that sound yeah. right to you?
You guys are very optimistic.
we are a nice games club. Place,
I would not. Maybe I'm not the right person for a nice games club. the unkind games club would be more my thing.
We haven't had an evil games club episode.
Yeah, we do have evil games club episodes. Maybe we'll
I don't
bring
mean
you
evil
back.
Though. Just kind of uncaringly unkind.
Okay.
All right. I feel like I
got exceedingly lucky. There's yeah. lots yeah. of people who make games that are probably more or less comparable to mine. Mm. You know, like that are in the similar style, and they just do way less well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think I came along at the right place, you know, and did a thing that wasn't like huge, right? Like our games are a lot less successful than a lot of games, but they're still bigger than a lot of people doing similar things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, can't explain it, right?
Yeah,
like it's,
yeah.
I think I've just been exceedingly lucky and it comes down to very little else.
Yeah.
Well, know? Yeah. And in terms of monetary success, that's kind of a number. It's just the.
That's the only success. Kind of success is monetary success.
Well, it depends on the.
I mean, I guess, yeah. Having people say that you made a neat thing is very much within everyone's reach. That's why it's not worth anything. It doesn't pay the bills.
You know, it absolutely does not pay the bills.
Right.
I mean, that's
this is
true.
The point
that's
I was
totally
trying
true,
to make. Yeah. I'm ruined as a person. I wasn't kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it really fucks up your like ability to judge things and
yeah,
value mm-hmm, things.
Yeah.
I struggle to make things just for their own sake. I'm just constantly like, oh, this is insignificant. It's like, well, why is it insignificant? It's like, what's going to be played by a small number of people?
Yeah.
You know, and that's just directly linked to how much money it makes.
Yeah.
Right? I guess unless you give it away for free. But like, I don't, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
That's interesting.
Like,
my brother, yeah. he has a successful game too. Hyperdot. And, you know, he struggles with that too. And I like talked to him about it because I haven't had like a big successful game out yet. And my aspirations for game dev is not about, it's not really about how many people, play the game. It's about how, I guess I just want to get my ideas out there.
Well, wait till a lot of people play one of your games.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah,
I'll all of a sudden change in form and I'll be like, oh dang, now I got to make a game that other people like, that a lot of people like, and it'll completely mess with you.
Yeah.
Dang.
Well, you know, I don't know how you feel about like the show, because the show is one of our most successful outputs.
Yes.
And I'll look at our download numbers and every time they go up a little bit, I'll be like, why aren't they higher? and it's that very natural feeling of I was really happy that first couple of weeks when we got 20 downloads.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And then, but that feeling faded really quickly.
Right.
Right.
And you kind of do have to sort of let yourself know that that's true about everybody.
Right. Become acclimated to it. You got to chase higher numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think
it's like an incremental game.
But it's life.
It's like an incremental game, and I've failed to like reach the next level.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question for you, Zach. So knowing this about yourself, like having that experience and having that mindset, and knowing that you have it, does it make the process of making the games less fun or less like personally gratifying? Or is it just different than if you had started out from, you know, when you started out and just making something?
I mean, I feel like I always just kind of make stuff because I have to. Mm. Like you were saying, like it's just the ideas have to come out in the form of a game.
Yeah.
Right. And that's sort of just, you know, that's the reason why it's all happening.
Right.
Right.
Like you have to because that's the way your brain is built, or you have to because you have to pay the bills and like eat.
Oh, no, because that's the way my brain works.
Okay, all right, that's what I thought you meant.
It's a bad way to pay the bill.
Yeah.
Especially when I started, right? It was just like, I want to make this game.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that I wanted to play it. I think that's what you were asking before about what games I like to play. And it's like, I don't even really play that many games anymore. I'm certainly not making games that I want to play. Like, people who make puzzles don't make games they want to play, because you can't play your own puzzles.
Right.
And I kind of feel like making any game kind of ruins it. I mean, I certainly don't want to play my non-puzzle games either. Right? Like, it's just, it's really, for me, making games is its own interesting activity, and I just want to do it, and I sort of accidentally stumbled into a way to do that also is, you know, successful enough to be my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and that's, I think that's one of the things is, it's easy as a creator to think that, like, when people start liking your games, that it's like, oh, it's because they like the stuff I make. And it's like, no, that's actually not true. Like, a small number of the people who buy our games like anything I make. I can sell 1,000 of anything, like anything, just because I made it. And they're like, whoa, this came from your brain. Your brain is so interesting. And it's just like, yeah, it is. You know, it's a very small number of people. right? Yeah. And most people who play our games, they like the game and they have no idea who we are,
right?
And who I am. Yeah. And it just doesn't matter. And so I think realizing that, like the sort of corollary to that is that, like, you can't just make anything and expect it to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. And this is why, like, our programming puzzle games were so much more successful, is because they were actually the things that people wanted, you know? And there's like a connection there. And it, I think that was kind of a hard thing to really understand. And then when you do understand that, it's like, well, what do you do with that? Like, I guess you just say, oh, well, I'll just make these other games for fun on the side. But, like, I don't really make games for fun on the side. I just do it as my job. And so it's like, well, where does that fit into it? And it's, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, you talked about that recently, about you're not really, your motivation for game jams has just plummeted.
Yes,
since you became a professional game developer with a salary.
Oh,
yeah. Because, I mean, I don't know, you're doing that all the time now. And so, like, a game jam, doing it for a weekend is an exciting departure from your regular life. That's not what a game jam is anymore. It's just,
I haven't done a game jam for like 20 years.
Right.
Totally tracked.
Yeah, it's just your job condensed into a weekend. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
That's so wild, because I have not experienced that. But that's because the games I make are really different in their purpose.
Yeah.
So I do educational games for kids and for adults. And that runs the gamut from things that are small and you can make them in like a month to things that are huge and it takes 2 years to pull them out. I mean, that's huge for like an educational game or a training game.
Yeah.
And so for me, game jams are still a way that I can do the process that I love, because that's one of the thing that I love most about game development isn't the games. It's like working with people, working with cool people to make something that's neat that other people might like or might be useful.
And that's something that's how I used to approach game jams, too, is I would always be like, I'm going to work with this person and I'm going to do this, whatever it is. It doesn't matter as long as I'm working with this person.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, the game that I ended up making with the Global Game Jam team, which I did not set out to do, that was not my plan for a Global Game Jam, was very different from anything that I make on the job.
Yeah.
So it's still a break.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I definitely cannot turn off the part of my brain that I have learned to lean into with my job, which is, what do we need the player to be able to do? Right. So when you're thinking about educational games, and I'll talk about this on the show forever, you think about, what do you need players to be able to do in the real world after they've completed the game? So, like, how do you use the game to help, like, highlight or outline a specific type of system that that exists in the real world and that the player is going to engage with? And how do you use the game to do that? So how do you recreate the parts of the system that you need to recreate so that they can see that system at work in the real world and then go and learn more about it or engage with it more effectively? I can't turn that part of my brain off.
Yeah.
Pretty much at any time. It's always just going. And so that's just how my brain works now. And that, so when you said that, you know, your brain just makes games, Zach, that totally made sense to me. It's just the thing that you do.
That's how my brain works too.
Yep.
I fall between the two of you. Like, I'm also, like, my energy for game jams has dropped, but for this kind of the same reason, but it's because it's like an exercise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm done with exercises.
Yeah.
When I make things, I want to make things.
Yeah.
But Ellen, I'm still with you in the sense that, like, I want to make new things all the time, but I tend to do them as thought experiments now. And that satisfies me in a way that, like, spending a couple days on it to do a prototype or a game jam doesn't anymore. So I think we're all we all feel the same things, just express it differently, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? Different journeys, different paths.
Yeah.
Different. I was going to try to make like a Zach dictator joke, and it didn't happen.
Anyway. Different forms of government.
Whatever.
Right?
Different forms of government.
Yeah. So back to your anarchist collection.
Yeah.
So you say you've been working, that's been sort of going for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Not to ask you to reveal anything about what you're working on if that's not what you're not comfortable, but, like, are you spearheading a project now? Are you contributing to others? How many, seeds are growing at the moment?
So I actually, as soon as we started the co-op, I immediately went out and got a job working at a game company, kind of, that ended in December, badly. So I haven't really been working on it much for very long.
Okay.
But yeah, I have a project that I was sort of like thinking about it and like noodling and doing some background on it during that time. And so I started working on it very recently. I guess I have like a card. I made a card game.
Cool.
Like, a year and a half ago. Yeah. And I stopped working on it. And then when we were all back in the office with the co-op, I sort of brought it out and made one of the other guys play it. And he was like, oh, this is kind of fun. I'm like, really? I think it's kind of trash. And he's like, no, it's fun. And I'm like, okay. So we spent like a couple months just trying to kind of like make it better. Mm-hmm. And then finished it. And one of the other people in the co-op is doing like the art for it. And, yeah. You know, we have our little like agreement set up in advance about how we split the money from it. And mm-hmm. we're going to do like a Kickstarter for it eventually.
Yeah.
It takes forever to do, especially when we're all working on the side.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's taken a while. But yeah, soon it's like a... It's like a cross between, so it's like a single player, like war themed card game, but mm-hmm. it's not a war game. It's really like a solitaire game. Cause like we did Ooh. The solitaire collection. Yeah. I like solitaire games a lot. And so it's somewhere in between the space of like a tactics, like a really, really stupidly lightweight tactics game and a solitaire game, which is really just about like adjacency of cards with numbers on it. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to, again, this is like a thing. It's like if I'm going to make a game, I want to sell it. But yeah. like my ability to make games that people want to buy are not necessarily up there with it. So it's like, I'm going to make and sell a game and it's not going to be the best game out there probably. But like, I don't really like board games that much, but they're tedious and yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. So that's like an experiment. That's the kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know if we would have done that at Zachtronics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of. We did a lot of weird stuff at Zachtronics too, though. I mean, like we ported some of our games to like MS-DOS and the Nintendo and the NES and stuff. So yeah. We got up to weird stuff then too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Other people at the co-op are working on better projects, but nothing to announce yet.
Yeah, it's interesting because we as a group, we do game jam episodes where we do a 1 hour game jam, and we tend to make card games for that because it's easy to do around a table.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did the same thing. We were like, oh, this one's pretty good, and we developed it and moved forward. So it's interesting you talk about that, because I think we all felt the same, like we're not board game people,
right?
And so it just felt a little alien but also exciting.
Yeah.
To sort of do that and make it a commercial project. Right. But just wait till you release it and get all that praise. It's going to ruin you.
Yeah. I actually feel very intimidated by the board game thing just because it's such a thing that's developed on its own.
Yeah.
And it's been a thing for long enough that it's like way up its own ass about like what people expect from board games. And it's like, if you look at the board games that come out now, it's just like, Jesus Christ, like it's like $100. It's this big, you know, like it's, it takes like a, like the biggest, like your table isn't even big enough for it.
Yeah.
Like the instructions are 50 pages and it's like, what is any of this? Like all my games are kind of simple by like, I mean, I guess like the thing about a lot of Zachtronics games is they're mechanically, they're usually pretty simple. They just kind of go together in ways that are hard for people to think ahead on. Mm. But like the mechanics are usually kind of like a smallish set of mechanics, right? They're just ones that require you to think. And so this is the same thing where it's like, it's actually like a really simple game. And I sort of worry, it's just like, oh, I don't really know what it takes to have people buy your card game. But yeah. I'll probably sell like 1,000 of them, like if all the diehard Zachtronics fans come out in force. I love them. The people who love you just because you made, like, stuff just because you made it is like the greatest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the greatest thing. They're the true fans.
I mean, just to get someone to try it, like, yeah. That's so mm-hmm. hard. And being able to start one step ahead on that is mm-hmm. is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. It's nice.
Yeah. Well, I think the last question I have for you from our outline is really just about, I mean, you're a person now who's starting a thing, but I think, what advice do you have, not for people starting out in their careers, but people looking ahead when they're starting something? I think none of us really ever consider what the end will look like. And I don't know that that's a bad thing necessarily, but is there anything that you learned in the process of sort of shutting down this phase of your career and the company that you would have liked to have known when you started it?
Not really. I mean, that's you kind of like, I don't know. I think it would have been weird for us when we started to think about how we were going to exit, because there was just so much information we didn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And also I've just done it so many times, right? Like, I guess I think about, you know, I don't know. Like it's just, it's not a foreign concept to me thinking about like how to, you know, like wrap things up.
Yeah.
So having done it so many times, and it's just like, yeah, this seems like a good time, you know, like, yeah. I don't,
so practice, I'm not then. Sure. Practice shutting.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good. I think it's good practice. Like for as like a life skill.
Yeah.
Right. Like you guys were talking about that. Like I think it's not that I would just say like, go like wrap things up just for the sake of wrapping things up. You know, like that's not, that's not the advice I would give. I don't know. It's just like, it was just the thing to do at the time.
Well,
like,
you recognize that you wanted this to end, and people around you recognize that they wanted it to end as well. And so you ended it when you had the ability to do that, instead of, you know, you recognizing, oh, I'm done with this thing, but you carrying it on for 3 or 4 hours or years or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's something that people can practice in their regular lives with small things. Like, I don't know, if you keep buying the same hot dogs and you're like, I'm sick of these hot dogs, but like, I don't want to buy anything else. You can just try buying something else. It's not a hot dog.
Well, I think your example is a little strange, but
yes, it is.
Yes.
It speaks to when you tie yourself to things,
right?
When you establish habits or dependencies,
yes.
To at least kind of imagine yourself, what would it take if this didn't go the way I wanted it, and I wanted to stop doing this? Mm-hmm. Because, I guess it's not a bad idea just to move forward, but it's worth it to think about what it would take to wind it down if you change your mind later.
Yes.
And whether that's 6 months from now or 3 years from now.
Yeah.
But I mean, Zach, your example is just, the example from your experience is just that it actually isn't that important to worry about it until it.
No.
Is that right?
I mean, I think about stuff a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot, right? So I guess it's natural to think about doing stuff like, I'm not sure. Yeah. There's not really advice here. This is like a no advice zone. Right?
Yeah.
It's just do the right thing at the right time. For a variety of reasons, right?
It's, yep.
Yeah, I feel like with all this stuff, it's the first time we shut down Zachtronics, right? It wrapped things up in a way that like we all benefited from it, and so you would think like, oh, they shut down the studio, that means that's bad. It's like, no, this allowed us to realize all of our successes. Because we were no longer living game to game, you get to cash out your last game.
Yeah.
Right? And that was huge, mm-hmm. right? That was a tremendous amount of money because we didn't have to spend it on like another game. Mm-hmm. And then we had all the like residual stuff from it.
Yeah.
You know, and then when we restarted Zachtronics again, we had still had done all that stuff in the past, and now we were able to like also leverage it again. And so I think the thing to kind of the thing about all of this is like when we do all this stuff, it's because we like we're better off doing it than not doing it. And I think that's what I meant by like thinking about stuff a lot is like just kind of crunching the numbers and like doing whatever it takes to get ahead, even if it doesn't look like a thing that people would do. Like I think people put like symbolic weight into the idea of like, oh, like shutting down the studio is symbolically bad. And it's like, but if you don't believe in symbols, then you can do whatever you want and do whatever it takes to be successful.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just an extension of that. It's just in life with everything. Like, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter what anything means. Like, just do the right thing to get what you want.
Yeah. 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 Just think about it. Right. Like, I think that is good advice because sometimes people don't sit and stew on a thought or think it all the way through.
Right.
And I suppose the obsessive compulsives among us are probably, well, of course, that's what everything is like. But that's not, you know. Not everyone does that. It's not always healthy.
Yeah. It helps to believe in nothing. Is that advice?
believe in nothing. You can do anything.
I'm gonna
sum it up as go for a walk. Think about stuff.
Go for a walk.
Well, it's also telling that everyone's different and every situation is different, right? There's not universal truths.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like and you end up in a no advice zone when you try to come up with them.
Right.
That's fair.
You know?
I think,
the walking, that's a good advice. One of the big things about Zachtronics is that we, almost like all of our decisions were made while walking. Our offices are always in a very walkable area. And so we very rarely would have like anything resembling a meeting where we were sitting down.
Oh, okay.
And we were like obsessive about this, right? Like this is one of the big problems I've had when going to work at other places is that other people don't go for walks every time they have any conversation about anything. And, You think a lot better when you're walking, it turns out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe part of why we make good decisions too, is because we made them all walking.
That sounds like a big advice. Deal.
It's hard to like work this into people's like structures and lives and stuff because so many, like any big company is set up around like having meetings where you sit down. I worked remote, the thing I did for a couple of months, I was all remote. And the thing I hated about working remotely is like, you kind of have to be at your computer to like talk to people.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't just go for walks and talk about, so you can kind of do like a phone call and it kind of works, but it's kind of awkward. And like the other person's not necessarily walking and it's really like it's a very valuable thing I think that we used to do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's the advice.
That's advice. That's advice. Yeah, exactly. Yep. I genuinely would recommend that. Make all decisions while walking. Somebody told me.
I mean, try it for a week and see if it works for you.
Yeah.
your legs pump the blood, and so it gets your blood flow going, which gets more blood going to your brain, which means it runs better. So I don't know if that's true, but sure, I'll just spread that idea anyway.
We can fact check it for you.
I mean, I could theorize, but it's really just me talking out of my ass, which is just like it maybe focuses you on a single topic, you know, and because you're sort of you're set on a task, which is to walk around. And so you don't have time to have your mind invaded with all sorts of other thoughts.
Yeah.
You've got just enough space for the one thing you're out there to talk about.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe endorphins, too.
Yeah.
True.
Also a good point.
That's a thing.
Right. It might make you less, frustrated to, you know, because sometimes in meetings you're just waiting for someone to stop talking.
Oh, gosh.
Maybe.
Sometimes.
But if you're on a walk, then it's fine. Let them talk as long as they want.
Yeah, because there's a squirrel over there and you can look at it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or like some
cool I guess tree. There's also a thing, too, because you can't walk and talk with that many people.
Yeah.
So on the topic of meeting, it keeps the conversation small and focused because you just can't drag that many. Even three people is like bad, right?
Yeah.
And so it keeps people not having to talk about stuff that they don't need to be in a meeting over.
I will have to look into this walking concept.
I mean, it's finally warm enough here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We'll look forward to your report in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Cool.
Zach. Where do people find you on the internet if they want to get more advice or wisdom or see what you're up to?
Oh, the best way to look at our stuff is still the Zachtronics accounts. So there's like a Zachtronics Twitter account and a Zachtronics mailing list. Mm-hmm. I guess you can look up coincidence.games. There's nothing there, but that's
where to park and wait for the next.
Yeah,
thing
exactly.
Me, right?
That's our website with no games on it. That's where the card game will show up soon, and that's where other stuff will hopefully show up after that.
Nice.
So
cool.
Yeah, there's a mailing list there too you can sign up for.
There you go. You don't have to then just like hover over the refresh button.
I'll mail you when something happens. Yep.
Technology. Wow.
Yeah, it feels pretty silly talking about a game studio with no games, but that's the situation.
Yep.
Hundreds do it all the time.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, I guess I was really planning on not talking about it to anybody until we had a game, but now it's like, well, we can talk about the structure of it, and that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wait, did we coax a scoop out of you? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I've never talked about it publicly before.
Oh, cool. Snap! Exclusive.
Finally, news on this program.
Yeah. To be fair, nobody really talks to you like when your studio doesn't exist anymore. They're like, oh, they're not a studio anymore. Like, we don't need to talk to them.
Yeah, it's possible that interest in this is pretty low. So
it's still news, dang it.
Yeah. Well, we have guests on all the time, and we tell them like we don't really care about talking about your next big PR thing.
Yeah.
And so we're not really interested in news usually.
Yeah.
So it's a special thrill for us. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Are we gonna get addicted to it now? Like the big numbers?
now that we've had a
taste
of it.
Tell me something new.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's discussion, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Twitter and Mastodon at Nice Games Club, where Dale tweets and toots about game dev resources and Waiting for Godot 5. We like hearing from you, so tweet and toot back, or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.